Hey.
All right, after the longest break in Dunked On history, we are back. Been a while since we last recorded. In fact, the last time we recorded, Dwayne Wade had just signed with the Heat. But we got a lot of signings to get to today. We are sponsored by MeUndies. You can find out more about them at MeUndies.com/capspace. Sustainably sourced Modal is the reason you want to buy them. Just incredibly comfortable fabric that's softer than cotton. And then also, we are sponsored by the Naked 3D Fitness Tracker, the world's first home body scanner. Find out more about them at naked.fit, F-I-T, naked.fit/capspace. Danny, I have missed you. We barely even got to hang out while we were in Vegas.
Yeah, all we got to do was eat.
Yeah, that's true. We did have an epic showdown at the Caesars Buffet. At one point, there was like a menu with all the drinks on it, and you sort of like hid what your activity level was behind that menu. But I don't know. So did we even declare a winner? Like, what did the other guys think?
They declared me the winner, but it was a tie. I mean, we were so close.
Wait. I don't even remember that happening.
No, that did happen. That did happen. You can talk to Dubin or Katz or whoever. But basically, also, I will claim that the menu was always there, and also the other four gentlemen that were with us will agree with that the menu was always there. You just didn't notice it because you were so zoned in on your amazing plates of food.
Yeah, the Caesars Buffet, by far the best one.
Incredible.
In Vegas, by the way. But enough about our stupid personal foibles here. Let's get to some basketball. I think I wanted to just kind of start with some big things that we've seen. You know, a bunch of stuff has happened since then. But I think the thing that has shown up to me the most is something that we've kind of been hammering on, something that KP has been talking about a lot, too, is that the idea of replacement level. And, you know, I know Dan Feldman had told us offline that he had talked to some agents who said there's going to be no such thing as a minimum contract anymore. There's going to be so much space out there. I didn't believe that. I don't know that Dan believed that. He's just relaying what some agents had said to him. And I think, obviously, that's not true. There have been plenty of minimum contracts. And also just, I think, again, the teams that paid for guys who are not just like frontline starters, who are not just like really solid guys that you know are going to help you, kind of, you know, mid-level to lower-end backups, ones who got, you know, big, huge contracts, the DJ Augustine types. I think that some of the contracts that very slightly lesser players, if lesser players got, showed that maybe those are the ones that are going to look like some of the less good contracts that we've seen.
Yeah, and it's also true that we didn't see, and this is an echo to last year, that all of the guys who took, you know, notable, let's say, discounts off of what we thought their markets might be, went to perfect situations. I mean, Festus Ezeli is an example of this. Like, there are a lot of centers in Portland, though they will be competitive. Terrence Jones in New Orleans, like, these are guys that could have gotten offers other places and gotten more money, much less the teams that spent their money too early.
Yeah, I don't know if I buy it on Jones because that, of course, I'm sure came from his agent that, oh, he turned down more money to go to New Orleans. Although, I mean,
but if you're Brooklyn, wouldn't you have offered him $3 million? I mean, why not? Better than...
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you. I would have offered him to it, but I am not sure, especially for Jones, a guy who has not made a lot of money in his career. I'm just a little bit skeptical that those offers were out there.
Yeah, I'm thinking more in terms of should rather than did.
Yeah. No, I agree with you that he should have gotten more. I mean, another one, Nene, you know, I think he feels like he has a chance to start in Houston. But, I mean, for him to, and we talked about him in the last show, but for him to get the room exception in Houston seems like just a total steal. But, all right, let's kind of start getting through things here. I think the biggest news that's come down since we last recorded is the retirement of Tim Duncan.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely massive figure in the sport, and somebody who, while he was older, was still a major contributor and a definitive one for last year's Spurs team, which was the second best team in the NBA throughout the regular season.
Yeah, and obviously at age 40, he had declined a little bit. I think actually that the sprained ankle that he tweaked a little bit in game one against the Thunder is something that hurt him in that series, hurt the Spurs in that series. And I think maybe what we saw him able to do, at least in game six of that series, kind of bringing them back at least to be competitive in that game, was an okay way to go out. But even the year before, when he was unbelievable in a game seven against the Clippers, really one of the few Spurs that played well in that game, I think that showing that he was able to do that at age 39 in like what ended up being a classic series against a great opponent, really just, you know, other than maybe you know, Jordan and Kareem, probably, and Karl Malone, those would probably be like the four guys that age the best. I mean, people forget that Jordan was actually like still pretty good for a guard when he played in Washington. But Duncan, to me, I've said it before, and for more of my thoughts on him, back at the end of February, I did a podcast on all-time NBA rankings with Royce Webb and Kevin Pelton from ESPN. I talked a little bit more about Duncan's place in history then, but to me, I had him, I think, number six all-time, and I have him as one of the best defensive players ever, probably a top two winner and teammate with Bill Russell, because all the other guys really kind of had their foibles other than Duncan. You never heard anyone say anything bad about him as a teammate. He spent all of his career with one team, and I think clearly the greatest player of his generation, and to me it's not even particularly close.
Yeah, and to me this goes in two branches, because I like to think about a player quality and their career, and I think it's true for both ways. I think Tim Duncan is the best player of his generation and had the best career of his generation.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, and you know, it's funny, you remember some of his MVPs that he won. I mean, one was actually controversial because, like, Jason Kidd went to New Jersey and won 49 games and met his team in the finals. I mean, you look back on that now, and the idea that he shouldn't have won the MVP in that year was pretty remarkable. I mean, and you know, I think he won back-to-back in 02 and 03, really just an unbelievable player and an unbelievable winner. Let's talk about the cap implications now of what they ended up doing with his salary that he did actually opt into for this year.
So since he opted into a salary and the Spurs are going to pay him, they effectively had two options. They could either put that entire cap hit on for this season, or they could stretch it and have it over three seasons, just like you would with a guy that you would waive, you know, for any other reason. And so what they elected to do was to use that extra flexibility this year and stretch him. So his on the books, it will be $1.9 million about for the next 3 years, as opposed to $5.6 this year.
You also had a great idea about naming an award for him, maybe perhaps to rectify the injustice that he never won it.
Yeah, so Kevin Pelton wrote a nice piece about how Tim Duncan was this impactful defender, and I would argue from my own just knowledge that he was probably number two behind Bill Russell in a very different era. And I think it would be appropriate to name the Defensive Player of the Year award after him, despite, and maybe partially because of, Tim Duncan never winning it.
Yeah, and perhaps just because he was so good offensively early in his career that, and was playing alongside David Robinson earlier in his career, that people didn't quite really understand exactly how good he was defensively. But if you just look at what the Spurs were defensively in the aggregate from the time that he got there, you know, it's really difficult to argue anything other than that he is one of the best defensive players ever. Let's get to the rest of the Spurs now. The Manu Ginobili thing is very interesting to me. They are paying him 1 year, $14 million. There was quite a bit of smoke here about them arguing over what his salary was going to be. Woj had a report that an offer from the Sixers forced the Spurs to triple their offer. However, they kept his cap hold on the books, so really they could have paid him anything up to the tax. Once they sign him, where are they going to be as far as like their tax room?
I think they're fine. So I believe, this is off the top of my head, I think there's about $20 million in space kind of between the cap and the tax. And Manu, his cap hold was about $5 million, so he'll take up about half of that. But the room exception, and they just don't have enough things to throw at that space because they didn't have a lot of guys that they were signing with bird rights or anything like that other than Manu. So there was that possibility before Tim Duncan retired that if they were going to give him a pay raise, that maybe then they could have pushed into the tax. But from what I can tell, it's unrealistic that they'll pay it this year.
Yeah, I think that's right, and they might have even had potentially more room even than that, because I think with him and Dedmon, they're probably, you know, maybe still $7 million or so short of the tax. They did pay it last year, so they are going to want to stay out of it this year, both from a financial standpoint and a future repeater tax avoidance. But what was so interesting about this to me is you recall that Manu was a free agent last year, signed for way below market with the room exception, had a wonderful year. I mean, I think clearly there are teams out there that should have offered him 1 year, $15 million, even 1 year, $20 million. If he were just really were looking to go to another team, he could have gotten offers like that. And it strikes me as un-Spurs that they wouldn't just take care of him you know, because as we mentioned, there's no opportunity cost. As long as they keep his cap hold on the books at, you know, a little bit under $6 million, that then they could basically pay him whatever they wanted to up until the tax. And what all this kind of smoke about this makes me think is that how would I handle it if I had a pre-existing agreement to with Mono to take way less with the room exception, then have a small cap hold and give them a bunch of space this year, and then use his bird rights to jack up his salary? Well, I would certainly be making it look like every step of the way that, oh, he was thinking about retirement, and then he came back, and then we couldn't agree on a value, and then some other team came in, and, oh, we just had to match it. You know, maybe that's real. Maybe that happened. But I think it does strike me as somewhat surprising that they wouldn't just go ahead and take care of him. And, you know, I'm not going to say even there's a 50% chance, but I think there's a non-zero chance that all of this was just a way to get Manu his money, that this was essentially like a two-year, $60 million deal, which would have been illegal, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
And no one is ever going to prove that if there was just a verbal agreement. But essentially, if you look at it as 2 years, $16 million, it makes a lot more sense that he took the room exception last year, and that is, of course, what enabled them, among some other sacrifices, including Tim Duncan's, to sign LaMarcus Aldridge last year.
And this is compounded by the memory that last year there were some front office execs that complained about Kawhi Leonard basically having a wink-wink, nudge-nudge deal with them to give them a lower cap hold and to sign over that, because he then signed for his maximum pretty easily. So
yeah, those executives who complain about that when Andre Drummond and Bradley Beal essentially did
right.
the same thing.
But what I'm saying is that's background. You know, if you were thinking, oh, wow, they complained about that, which was a nothing burger, then maybe they're going to do this. And I want to do a little bit of myth-busting with the idea of Boban, about Manu getting paid more effect than Boban, because Boban did have a low cap hold, and the Spurs ended up not retaining him, but Manu's money didn't affect that at all, unless you're even arguing the luxury tax, and even then it's not really true. But all they needed to do was clear the amount of space of the non-taxpayer mid-level, not sign a couple of players differently, you know, however they wanted to do that with the cap. Manu did not affect that in the slightest.
Yeah, well, you could make the argument that he did if he would have just taken the room exception again.
I guess.
You know, then if that's what their offer was to him, then maybe they could have retained Boban. But to be honest, I actually think, I don't know that he's a better player than Boban, but I think that Dwayne Dedmon will actually help them more. At least they finally have someone who has some athleticism, can move their feet on the perimeter a little bit, can get up, block some shots. They just desperately needed some sort of athleticism. Dedmon really struggles offensively to catch the ball. He's one of these guys where you throw it to him and it's like, oh, it's an open dunk. And then, oh no, now he's got to sort of like gather it and like bend over. And like there's a 50% chance he's going to travel before he like tries to go up with a dunk. Like he's definitely someone who struggles offensively, but I think defensively he is someone who will have a lot more versatility than Boban would have. Boban, I don't think, is someone who could have really played against their main rivals in any sort of significant capacity. So I do understand why they went that way, but you're right. They certainly, it was not like they had some plan with Manu here, and then, you know, that I think Boban was a goner regardless.
Yeah, and so their other moves, so basically after they finished their cap by signing Powell, they did Dedmon with the room, Manu with bird rights, and then they signed Rayan Archidiakono, and I don't know if it's Brian or Bryn Forbes, who went to
Michigan. Yeah, Bryn Forbes.
It is Bryn.
Okay. Who's been shooting the crap out of the ball in summer league.
And so, basically, at this point, they have 13 guys, but that doesn't include their rookie-scale players, Dejounte Murray and Levio Jean-Charles, are the most interesting. They might be signing both of those guys. I haven't heard anything definitively yet. And that would bring them to 15. Of course, they could always make a move with one of their guaranteed players. And a note that I had with San Antonio that I think is really compelling for this year is, unlike in other years where they were so deep, they're going to have to rely on some of their young guys. And that doesn't, you know, that could be Kyle Anderson, Dwayne Dedmon, whoever it's going to be, because
Jonathan Simmons, yeah.
Because they don't have, especially on the wing, but also at the big man spots, they don't have the depth that they used to have with guys like Boris Diaw, David West last year. You know, they're going to have to be using these players as a higher part of the rotation, and it's a different kind of challenge for Pop.
Yeah, they may have to go small more as well, which I think will be good for them if they play Kawhi at the four more. Powell probably going to have to play a pretty large number of minutes, which may not be the best for him. I'm sure they just won't do that, especially because I think they're going to need to get home court advantage against the Clippers. After losing to them with not having home court advantage on the last day of the season, that might be a concern. But I do think that they're going to protect Powell's minutes a little bit more maybe than the Bulls did. So quickly here, you mentioned the orders of transactions. This is something that is important, right, when you actually are just physically signing the guys. So you always do the guys that are just using pure cap space first and the guys with the exceptions later, right? So you keep Manu's cap hold, which is a little under $6 million on the books, and you use all that basically to sign Powell. You also have your rookies. You sign them later on too because you're signing them to 120% of scale usually instead of 100. So anybody whose salary is going to count for more than their cap hold, you wait until the end to sign them. So they would keep Manu on the books. You don't want to sign anybody to your room exception until you've used up all of your room either, because it'll count actually against your cap space until you've used up all your room, or at least as much of it as you possibly can. So that's kind of the order of transactions.
Can I add one thing?
Deadman. Yeah.
So also the other one that happens, if you can squeeze it in, are guys that are on really low salaries before you go for the cap, because if you have a little bit of cap space, you can sign them to longer contracts. So that's when you can get a minimum contract of more than 2 years, or give a guy a little bump like Indiana did with Joe Young and I think somebody else last year, there was Rakeem Christmas, I think, was the other guy. So you need to do that with cap space as well if you're going to go over the minimum, if you're not going to use the minimum exception with those guys.
Yeah, and that would generally be second-round rookies, undrafted rookies that you want to sign for longer than 2 years, which is the most you could do with the minimum exception. A few other things on the Spurs. Sounds like Livio Jean-Charles is going to be brought over this year, although he's had kind of a tough summer league. We'll have a podcast, of course, on all the prospects in summer league, probably two podcasts, in fact. DeJounte Murray will be signing this year. And Nikola Milutinov, who you mentioned was, I think, the number 26 pick last year, they have signed that letter now that basically if both player and team agree, they send it into the league office, and the league allows you to take their cap hold off the books, their first-round rookie cap hold off the books. So they have done that with Milutinov. He now cannot join the team until the following July 1st. One quick question I want to ask about them. Do you think there's anybody else that they could have added, considering that, you know, I think they gave Gasol $15 million a year, second-year player option. Do you think there's anyone else that they could have gotten with that contract that would have helped them more?
I would have liked somebody more defensively capable. Like, I don't think this team, as much as we talked about last year that their Achilles heel was scoring, so maybe you do that, but I understand why they went with Gasol. Like, you know, maybe with what Festus got, you do that, and then you get maybe a better wing with it, but there wasn't a clear-cut kind of the equivalent of a killer app for them that would have solved all their problems.
I think that's right, just because of it seems like they want to use 2017 space, so, and as Zach Lowe wrote in his kind of summer wrap-up column, he believes that they don't even think that they can beat Golden State this year with Powell. I mean, Powell just is a horrendous matchup against Golden State, not particularly great against Cleveland either. I mean, those are the teams, and not even particularly great against the Clippers either, for that matter. But, you know, I think that a more defensively oriented big man would have helped. Could they have gotten Jan Mahimi to come back? Probably not. He got 4 for $64. I don't think they would have wanted to offer him that number of years. Nene, if you could guarantee me that Nene would stay healthy, I actually like him better for this team than Gasol, but I don't think you just can't count on him at this point in his career to be a starting center. In fact, you probably couldn't count on him to be a starter even in Washington during some of his years. Other than that, you know, who else could have been out there? Any of the restricted guys, you would have had to go at least 2 years on them. So I do think that although Powell is not the greatest fit, the fact that he's older, was willing to take a shorter contract, may be the best, I think, that they could have done when you consider that any center who was above them in the market got more years that I don't think they're particularly interested in giving up.
So a little nugget, I was talking with mutual friend Fred Katz last night, and I don't know why that jogged my memory, but so there's been discussion about Kawhi playing the four, and that is certainly something that they will do. And what I would say is probably their best two through four, if they're going to do that, is Manu, Danny Green, and Kawhi playing together, just because Manu's creation, Danny Green's defense, and Kawhi. That trio only played 47 minutes together last year. So that is something, because Pop, I think, basically treated Manu and Danny Green mostly as kind of twos, and so they swapped for each other. And it will be fascinating to see if he changes that dynamic this year.
Yeah, it will be. I think that he should. But, again, he was very reluctant to do that, obviously, in the Oklahoma City series. And I think he doesn't really want to expose Kawhi necessarily to that level of wear and tear. And maybe you'll see more of, like, Kyle Anderson playing the four as well, although I'm not really a huge slow-mo believer. But I am, however, a believer in MeUndies. Why are MeUndies so great? It's basically, it starts with sustainably sourced modal. Very difficult to pronounce. It's M-O-D-A-L. And I've struggled with it even on past programs, but the underwear is much more comfortable than any other underwear that I've ever tried. It's twice as soft as cotton, and you get to try your first pair of MeUndies essentially for free. If you don't love them, they're free. No questions asked. You can send them back. They have a ton of styles. You can make a statement with your underwear if you care to, or go with a more basic style. And shipping is free in the U.S. and Canada, and if you want to get a subscription plan, you can save up to $8 a pair. So you can get the subscription or a single pair, 20% off your first order as well when you go to MeUndies.com/CapSpace. We've been talking about CapSpace all the time on the program. We'll continue to do so. That's why the URL is CapSpace for all of our sponsors. MeUndies.com/CapSpace for 20% off your first order. MeUndies.com/CapSpace. So we were very critical of Houston's offseason. I actually saw Daryl Morey. He was actually one of the speakers at Sports Business Classroom, and he was kind of giving me a little shit about that. But I think it looks better now with the Harden renegotiation and extension.
I guess. I mean, so basically...
Not great, but better.
Better in a way. I mean, they could have still had the space to do this even if they didn't give Ryan Anderson $20 million a year. Like that they didn't have to do that to, you know...
Can I explain why I think it's...
Sure.
Now that you are... Yeah, I mean, it's more like, okay, you've done this, now here's how you can save it and make it not as bad. I'm not saying, like, I agree with you. I still would have tried to go with the short term. One of the things I've actually been trying to nail down in conversations with people that, and I haven't really been able to yet, is how many offers were really out there of the sort of short term, just crazy big money. You know, we talked about like Luol Deng for 2 years and $60 million. I haven't really been able to have enough conversations yet, but I will let you know what I find out when I do, of like whether those offers were really out there and it was players just didn't want to do them, they wanted to go longer for slightly more money, or whether teams instead just weren't really making those offers. But obviously this is a team that I felt like could have gone in that direction rather than the 4 years for Ryan Anderson. But in any event, what happened here, Harden now is getting essentially a bump up to the max for this year. He was about $10 million below that. And then next year, especially helped by the fact that the cap estimate is lower, and obviously that's subject to a new CBA, but Harden will earn $26.5 million this year, $28.3 million next year, which would really only be about $2 or $3 million or so less than his max for next year. But certainly, again, that'll be about $15 million more than, well, no, I'm sorry. It'll be about $12 million more than he would have been making just under his normal contract. And then he is guaranteed $30 million for the first year, new year of the contract, the extension part. So that's 2018-19. He would have been a free agent in 2018. So that for sure he is locked in for. And then also, if something goes poorly for him, he always can break out a player option for $32.7 million in the 2019-20 season, when I believe he will be either around 29. So he can get back on the market at that point. Hopefully will still be really good, can get either a five-year deal or a four-year deal. Again, you always want to get teams to sort of overpay on the back end of that contract in your early 30s. So it's really perfect timing for him. And basically he is getting about $50 million extra dollars to extend for only one more year. So that's, I think, a win for him. I think it's a win for Houston because the cap space that they are using these first 2 years, the $10 million, they weren't going to have significant space anyway because they had locked in already to Anderson and Gordon with four-year deals. So I think that it is a win-win given the surrounding situation now that Houston had put itself in.
to me, it is unambiguously a win for James Harden, because what he gave up was, you know, he gave up 1 year of freedom and the possibility of the max structure totally changing in the next CBA, which is a very real possibility. You know, if it jumps a percentage, if it even is eliminated, that it affects it for that one season for 2018-19. But he got a huge pay raise to do it. And the other major factor in this, and Kevin Pelton, I believe, is the first person I saw that identified this, is that adding that extra year makes him a free agent in his first, if he opts out of the player option, he will become a free agent in his 10th, he'll have had 10 years of experience, which is the same issue why Kevin Durant signed the 1+1, why he was going to sign that with anybody, Warriors or otherwise. So that's a huge thing for Harden, because as much as the structure could change, I don't believe the 10+ structure will change. I think that's something that has been around for a while, and that just makes sense with the way the players value everything, as much as we personally disagree with it. So for Harden, it's huge in that sense, and he gave up, you could call it 1 year freedom. For the Rockets, I have no problem with it at all. You know, like, he's a very good player. It does affect if they were interested in trading him, you know, for assets, whatever that would be. It does affect that just because they're paying him more. But I don't think it hurts it too much, because his contract is still reasonable considering his prodigious talent, and you get an extra year of team control. I think it's different. You know, basically, if they had wanted to move him, it probably would have been by the deadline. I didn't see any indications that they wanted to do that. So it's kind of a loss in flexibility that didn't matter, which is, I think, what you were getting at. And so it's a huge win for Harden. It's a notable win for the Rockets as well. But I think this is different than spending up that money. It's the same issue for me with the Lakers, which is, I understand that given the other constraints, it makes sense with what they did, but they still shouldn't have signed those contracts.
Yeah, and my prediction had been that Harden wouldn't be on the team after 2018 after these signings, but that this has obviously helped to prevent that. And also, if things just really continue to implode for the Rockets, they can trade him now. They basically have another year in which they'll be able to trade him and get something back for him also. So they bought themselves some more time here to kind of figure things out. Some other smaller moves for them: Pablo Prigioni, 2 years at the minimum, a second-year team option. Pablo performed actually maybe a little bit above his weight when he was there 2 years ago. I think mostly kind of a culture guy, a locker room guy at this point, but maybe can step in a little bit and run a pick and roll for you and not screw up too badly, but, you know, definitely an end of the roster guy. And then they waived Andrew Goudlock, who they had signed right at the start of the playoffs. And they have Michael Beasley, who still is non-guaranteed for a little bit. And they also have Demo still sitting out there with, I believe, a $5.7 million cap hold. That has used up all of their space now, and they have 14 roster spots taken up. What do you think ends up happening with Demo?
His qualifying offer is so low that it would be amazing for him to sign it, especially considering his injury history. But the market for centers, and I'm actually working on a piece on this, the market for centers is so dry right now that it's hard to see who would really make him a notable offer that would be, you know, that Houston would have to consider whether they're going to match it. Like, it might end up being that a team like Brooklyn or whoever just says, throws, you know, 3 years, $30 million or something at him, and Houston just goes, okay, thank you.
Yeah, the Nene signing for so cheap was definitely disastrous for Demo's leverage. And obviously the back injury as well. I think the fact that Detroit voided the trade ostensibly because of that back injury, that's not helping his market value either. And if you're Houston now, you don't necessarily need him for this year, although Nene obviously is an injury risk. What do you think would be a reasonable long-term offer that you would make to him as Houston, regardless of whether he would accept it or not? I mean, what would you come with, like $8 million a year for like 3 years or something? Or,
yeah,
or even 2 years?
I would approach him for maybe like 2 years, $18 million. And that, or 3 years, 24, you know, so like if he wants to take a little less per year, then you can give him more years. I think that would be that. And maybe somebody else offers
him a little. Let's not forget that they're pretty much capped out for the next few years now. So giving him more money to kind of keep him in the fold doesn't really hurt you that much. And Nene is only in town for 1 year. So maybe you hope that, all right, we'll pay him this year. And yeah, he'll be competing with Nene. Maybe he'll get a few minutes at the four, but probably not that many. You know, I could see them going with, you know, Anderson obviously is going to be the starter there. They probably want to try out like KJ McDaniels and Sam Decker at the four as well, or maybe even Ariza if you're going to go with Harden and Gordon and a point guard as well. But I think having him for a couple years from now when you're not really going to be a free agent player, or at least on a tradable contract if he starts to look better, would be good. I mean, from Demo's perspective, again, hasn't made that much money in his career. You know, I would think about something like, you know, 3 for $27, just taking that if I could get a player option on the last year. But, you know, I think, again, the anchoring, when I'm guessing the Rockets offered him, you know, something like 4 for $40, even just in their extension negotiations when it was sunnier times for all involved. And so with that anchoring, it's got to be hard for him to kind of swallow his pride and take less than maybe was offered in the extension. But it'd be interesting to see what happens with him. Let's move on now to the Portland Trailblazers, who have had one of the more interesting runs since we last recorded.
Yeah, so once they signed Evan Turner, I think we both were like, okay, well, they're not going to solve their biggest issue. How is this all going to work out? And what they decided to do was pay everybody, which is okay. I have no problem with that.
Well, yeah, except Mo Harkless, they haven't yet. He's still out there as a restricted free agent. But I think the place to start for me, even though it's not the biggest, is with Festus Ezeli. 2 years, $16 million, a second-year team option. And I think it's very clear that his physical issues looked like they're going to be a big problem. I felt that way as well. Really too bad for Festus, because if he had not gotten hurt, he would have been in line for probably one of those same contracts that Biombo or Mahimi got, frankly. And I really like it for Portland. This is the perfect team for him to go to, in the sense that you're not relying on him. You have other options at center. You've got Myers Leonard. You've got Ed Davis. You've got Plumlee. Those guys are all totally fine. So if it goes wrong for Ezeli, not the end of the world. But Ezeli does offer a dimension in terms of the defensive rebounding, protecting the rim, ability to move his feet in pick and roll, like as we saw actually against those very same Blazers at times during the Golden State series, that I think he adds another dimension. The problem comes offensively, of course, when if they're going to trap Lillard in a pick and roll with him, then he's not going to be able to necessarily make a play. You're going to have to get creative with kind of shorting the pick and roll, which means bringing someone else up to receive the pass during the trap and then maybe finding him on the roll. But the hope is just that Festus can stay healthy. If he does, that is an excellent value contract. I think we are a little bit more skeptical about the match on Allen Crabbe, however.
Crabbe just got a lot of money. I mean, that the big issue with him, not only is his role marginalized to me partially by Evan Turner, he got paid like something he hasn't proven. I mean, I don't know if he's a go-to scorer. He's like, maybe he's more of a secondary guy, but he's getting paid like a starter, and his defense hasn't been proven yet, so I probably would have just not matched that. You know, you want to pay him 4 years, $75 million, go ahead.
Yeah, well, so let's work that out. Where are they now in terms of salary, the tax, like 2017 space? Like, what is the opportunity cost of the fact that they matched? Because obviously it doesn't cost them anything this year, right? Like, they were capped out. His cap hold was tiny. It was $2.7 million. They had full bird rights. So they're able to match this no problem for this year. But the problem becomes, are you able to maintain flexibility for future years? They also have CJ McCollum's extension coming up, possibly Plumlee's as well, although the other beauty of the Ezeli contract is if he works out, now you could just move on from Plumlee, maybe even during this season, if Ezeli is looking good and you don't have to overpay Plumlee when he becomes a restricted free agent next year. CJ, of course, they are going to have to pay. What do their books look like going forward now?
Okay, so I have Portland before Mo Harkless. So before Mo Harkless, I have them as not being even in the tax, depending on what happens with him. But the big issue is 2017-18. So in 17-18, you have CJ McCollum and Mason Plumlee both have $8 million cap holds. And CJ alone will be making more than $16 million. And right now, I have them at $3 million below the luxury tax line. So if they retain both of them, then they're going deep into the tax. If they retain just CJ, then they're okay. You know, then it'll be moderate. It'll be there. But when I made the comment about a majestic luxury tax bill, that was under the idea that they kept both. And, of course, signing CJ to it will be a long-term contract, then gets you into the more complicated things, because now they're, you know, let's say 2018-19, they'll be paying Allen Crabbe about $20 million, Lillard $27 million, CJ, you know, whatever he ends up getting. And so they will basically have this team, despite, you know, making some reasonable plays on Leonard and Festus Ezeli.
Yeah, I guess that's right, and that's kind of why I was critical of the Turner move, because, again, you're kind of locking in, not giving yourself, in my opinion, much more of an upside. But it'll be interesting to see what happens with them, kind of where they fall in the hierarchy. Again, we'll have some podcasts on that coming up when we really start to think about it. A couple more little housekeeping things for them. They signed their second-round pick, Jake Lehman, I assume, the usual, like, three-year second-rounder deal. And then they traded for Shabazz Napier, which we talked about on the last program. They've also have really got their room exception that they could still use, but they are at 15 spots now, including Harkless and Luis Montero. They had to waive Cliff Alexander, whose actually salary became guaranteed. He's been playing on their summer league team, so it's possible that he could be brought back depending on if Harkless returns or Luis Montero. Do we think there are any potential offer spots out there for Harkless, like any teams that you feel like should be considering him that have a lot of space left? Maybe Brooklyn would be one.
There are two, Brooklyn and Denver. I think Denver would be a really logical place for him to just get another guy in their forward rotation, and it's especially because they don't know what they have long-term in Wilson Chandler, considering he missed all last season.
Yeah, at least for Denver, they, I think, have plenty of space in 2017 as well. I do think that with the amount of money that teams spent this year, that 27 and the cap being lower in 2017 than a lot of people thought, potentially having a better free agent class that year, that maybe you don't necessarily want to spend a ton if you're Denver, and I think they're an organization that does enjoy saving money where they can. So I don't know necessarily about Denver. I do think Brooklyn, especially since they have so little of options at power forward right now that are established. I mean, I think Trevor Booker still is looking like their starting power forward, right?
Yeah, so, and they paid Luis Scola $5.5 million to back him up.
Yeah, so I do think that Harkless could be higher upside at the very least. Now, I mean, it's actually, if they were to make an offer sheet on Harkless, it would be quite reminiscent of 2003, when the Heat made an offer sheet to Elton Brand. It got matched by the Clippers, and then they made a very similar one to Lamar Odom, got him. The Clippers did not match, and then they're able to flip Odom the next year for Shaquille O'Neal. So it's actually a big point in the Heat's evolution of that initial championship team with Dwayne Wade. So maybe we'll see history kind of repeat itself, other than, you know, the Nets actually getting to a championship level within a couple of years. That's probably not going to happen. Yeah.
One thing I wanted to bring up with Portland, and of course this can be resolved by a trade, is that their big man rotation is really weird to me, because they have a lot of guys that are good. Like, they don't have a talent deficiency, which is wonderful. You don't want to have one. But if Al-Farouq Aminu was a revelation at the four last year, and so if he's going to play a lot of his minutes there, then you have the unquestionable centers, to me, are Plumlee, Azeli, and Leonard. And then you also have Vonleh and Ed Davis, who are in some ways maybe more fives than fours, and offensively in particular.
Wait, did we even talk about Leonard? He got 4 years.
4 years, 41.
$41 million, which is interesting because, and that's, there's reporting that he was offered 4 for $40, so 4 for $41, I think that extra $1 million maybe is just kind of symbolic there to let the agent save face a little bit. But Leonard, I mean, I think, frankly, he probably should not be in the rotation. I mean, they have four centers now, essentially. None of those guys, I don't think, can defend the power forward position adequately. They've tried Davis there. He looks like he could defend it adequately. He probably is not really that good there. Leonard gets blown by. Azeli, you know, he's a center, so is Plumlee. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, you have to imagine a trade is coming. I think this is just one of these, don't lose him for nothing. Maybe they're just scared that he was going to take the qualifying offer. But it certainly did not seem, because of the teams that have space, like who had $10 million that they wanted to throw at Myers Leonard at this point? I mean, maybe we should do that, actually. You want to just go through, and we don't need to go through every team, but who are the teams that have significant space left here? That's probably a good way to kind of wrap up this part one, and then we'll take it to a part two.
Okay, so Brooklyn has about $23 million left. Philly has about $29 million left. Minnesota has about $15 million left.
Yeah, and actually Minnesota, you mentioned this earlier, where they stretched Kevin Martin. Not a big deal, but they stretched basically this $4 million buyout over 3 years past this one. I actually used that as an example when I was teaching my sports business classroom students about how you have to elect whether you're going to stretch someone or not at the time that you waive them. They elected to stretch them, and it clearly seems now when they just have $15 million in space sitting around that the better option would have been to just take the whole hit in 2016-17 and then not have them on your books for a couple years going forward. Who else besides Minnesota?
Denver has about 26. Indiana has 10.2. There are rumors they've signed Aaron Brooks. I don't have that in there.
Yeah, and Indiana, I think it seems like they're going to try to go the renegotiate and extend route with Jeff Teague.
Yes. Phoenix has 18.3 million left, and Utah still has a little less than 11.
Amazing that Utah has so much depth.
And that'll probably be Derek Favors. That'll probably be Derek Favors or George Hill, depending on. I've advocated for them to renegotiate and extend Derek Favors for a while now.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I wouldn't say probably because those guys have to agree.
Oh, agree. Yeah, I just think they should try.
Yeah. No. No. I think that's true too. So those are the teams with significant space. None of those teams really need a center at all. And so I'm not sure where an equivalent offer for Leonard was coming from, but I think they just felt like, all right, we're going to be way capped out, as you said already. We might as well retain the asset. Maybe if he looks pretty good here, he's only 24, he can shoot the ball, that, you know, he might be tradable at some point. But this was one of the biggest takeaways from the mock off season for me that became true, was just the market dried up for centers. That, of course, is why it ended up being so egregious that the Lakers spent their $16 million a year for 4 years on someone like Mozgov. I mean, it's hard. If they had not offered him that, I mean, it's hard for me to imagine that Mozgov would have gotten more than like 3 years at $10 million a year, even. And even that seems quite generous to me. I mean, but, you know, they paid him like the player that he was and just kind of forgot about the injuries. But anyway, yeah, not to make this the All Lakers podcast. Was there any other things that you wanted to talk about here, kind of just big themes that struck you before we end this and take it to part two?
Well, I feel like we should talk a little bit, since we didn't do it at the outset, about the reduction in the cap estimate, because I do think that's an important story.
Yeah.
And so basically what happened was I hadn't gone through and worked out how they built that projection, but one of the important parts of it is always the estimated shortfall. And that's actually, the estimated shortfall was always what caused the big spike next year, because the revenue increase already happened, but the idea was that the owners weren't going to pay the players enough, and if there's a shortfall, some of that money, I believe it's half, goes into the salary cap for the next year. And so the idea was that the owners were going to spend so much less that eventually the players would do it. I hadn't run through the math, and so what happened was the owners were spending enough that when they came to the evaluation, that the shortfall was going to be less than expected. So instead of being a 107 spike, it's going to be 102. And that affects a lot of things. But what I was surprised by is that this wasn't more ownership spending than I really expected, maybe marginally, but not much.
It's interesting. And I would love to know exactly what process the league used in these estimates to model it out. I think that if you are a smart team, you should be doing that yourself, trying to figure out what the different scenarios are. And then obviously it's hard to do that too, because we could have a new CBA, in which case the cap could be higher or lower, the revenue split could be different. But yeah, I think that 107 wasn't so much based on huge revenue increase off of this year's 94 as it was just the sort of self-correction. And the reason why that happens is, if the cap doesn't, if the teams don't spend enough money, that leads to the owners, like this year, having to write the players a check. And every team has to participate equally in writing that check. So the system would much prefer that salary just get paid out to the players normally as part of contracts that teams and players agree to. And so they don't want that shortfall. They want it to be teams actually paying out contracts that have been agreed to. So that's why the system bumps the cap up by more than the revenue to sort of allow the teams and players to agree on contracts to make up that shortfall in succeeding years. And that's why the 107 was going to happen. But now it looks like there's not going to be as big of a shortfall. And I think if I had to guess what the difference in how it played out compared to the league's modeling was, is that many teams brought guys back using bird rights to give them a substantial raise. For example, Washington and Detroit with Beal and Drummond. Now, we knew that those were going to happen, so that's why I kind of question what the league's modeling process was. Mike Conley is another one. He only had a $14 million cap hold. He's starting off at the max at $26 million. Same thing, Drummond. His cap hold was only like $9 million, and he's going to start off at his max of $22. Same thing, Beal, $14 million cap hold. He's going to start off at his max of $22. So you get enough of those guys re-signing with bird rights for way more than their cap hold, and then you have teams using cap room, and now they have much higher salaries. And I think that's, to me, is the only thing that the league really could have missed on, because there are still plenty of teams, you know, we just talked about them all, who have a ton of cap space left and just aren't really using it at all. Evan Fournier would be another one with the Magic, too. He had a really small cap hold. He's re-signing with bird rights as well. But you had a lot of those guys, but I don't think any of those, to me, came as a surprise. I think that was the most likely outcome for all of those players specifically. So I think that for teams that just kind of relied on what the league said, well, now you might be in a little bit of trouble if you're counting on having that extra $5 million. Do you want to talk a little bit about teams that, in particular, that if it does indeed come out to where it's 102 next year instead of 107, and again, we don't know that for sure because there's a new CBA, but teams that would be particularly hurt versus teams that would be particularly helped?
Well, so I'll start with the most surprising team that was helped, that would be helped by this. Of course, we don't know the structure because it'll probably be a new CBA, and it's, I wrote about this for the Sporting News, and that's the Warriors. And the reason for it is that what happens is Kevin Durant, because he's going to opt out, the Warriors will have non-bird rights with him, which allows them to give him a small but notable pay raise on his prior salary. But what happens is when the cap drops like this, that drops the max that he can get using cap space or whatever, but does not affect his non-bird status. So what happened is it changed the sacrifice from that he would have to do to stay on non-bird rights and thus keep the Warriors over the cap from being, I think it was about $3.5 million to less than $2 million. And so if that structure holds, it seems very reasonable that he would take that less for 1 year, and then that would allow them to sign Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala to basically whatever contracts they wanted using their full bird rights.
Yeah, that is pretty big. Otherwise, Iguodala would have had to probably take a little bit of a pay cut as well off of what his cap hold will be. His cap hold will be about $18 million. Livingston's will be about $10 million. So they would have, at the very least, not been able to retain one of those guys, most likely.
It's bad for the Knicks and the Bulls, because those are teams that would have...
Yeah, any team that has established players that they don't want to dump, and we're hoping to get to one max slot, or even in the case of the Bulls, maybe two, depending on what happens with Wade. But I assume their plan is keep Wade around next year, and then he'll help recruit in some more free agents because he has that player option for, I think like the $24 million or so. I think the Celtics they can always open up more space, but they might have to move a few pieces around. I think that the Cavs, just because their tax bill is going to get a lot higher. I think that, you mentioned the Knicks and the Bulls.
Oh, one other big team. I think it changes the incentives for Utah in terms of Derek Favors, because they're losing about $5 million in that flexibility next year when they're going to have to pay Rudy Gobert. So if they weren't playing, like, it makes it less likely that they're going to add to their team, and so you might as well just sign Favors now.
Yeah, that makes sense too. But yeah, I think a lot of teams that are kind of
go back to Miami, because it's huge for them.
Yeah, right. If they're, and a lot of that depends on what happens with Bosch too, where they would probably be trying to get to two max slots, and we'll get to them in part two, but, you know, they signed a bunch of guys to one-year deals. Without Bosch, they'd be trying to get to two max slots. With Bosch, they'd probably be trying to get to one, and they're probably, have to look at it a little bit more closely, but they're probably kind of right up against that a little bit. And then another one is teams that kind of spent up to the cap this year, are capped out, and then need to do rookie extensions. You mentioned Utah is one. They're not capped out, but they probably will be by that point. Portland is another. Now they're going to be looking at a lot more potential damage with the tax. Oklahoma City could be another one, too, although if Westbrook leaves, they'll probably have plenty of space. If he stays, they're going to have to extend Oladipo. They're going to have to extend Steven Adams. They have to extend Andre Robertson. Now they could run into some trouble as well. So definitely a $5 million downgrade is pretty significant, and it could have some consequences if, in fact, the league ends up or the players end up opting out, and we either have a new CBA, in which case maybe it wouldn't matter as much, or if we have a similar system to what we have now. So it'll be interesting to see who ends up actually getting hurt by that. All right, that's probably enough of our ramblings for today. It's good to get back into the rhythm. We'll probably come back within the next couple of days to finish up this summer wrap-up, and then we'll have lots more content. Really going to be going, I think, 2 days a week now for the next few weeks, probably until we get into team previews in, you know, maybe late September or so, and then we'll go back to our normal 5 days a week schedule. But we'll see what the audience is like. If we're really getting pretty popular and we've got time, maybe we'll throw in a third podcast a week. But we'll probably start at two right now and kind of play around with it and see whether it's worth doing a third or not. But, all right, we'll be back within a couple of days here, though, with part two of
Can I plug some stuff?
Final summer wrap-up. Yes.
So I released a new Real Jam Radio yesterday with Adi Joseph of the Sporting News, where we went through the offseason, different than what we did here, kind of winners and losers. And then also something that I think we'll probably do on Dunked On later, which will be a fun exercise to see how it changes. We did tiers in both conferences, so kind of where it's shaking out right now. And, of course, a lot's going to change in the months to come. But we did that. And then also I wrote on Friday for the Sporting News about LeBron's contract situation and kind of whether he's going to go early bird or non-bird and the risks and benefits each way.
Yeah, and I will not spoil that for you, but it is a very interesting calculus for him. Don't forget about our sponsors for today's episode. That's MeUndies, MeUndies.com/CapSpace, the URL. Easy to remember, we talk about CapSpace a ton on the program. The Naked 3D Fitness Tracker, the world's first home body scanner, as well sponsored us today. That's naked.fit, FIT/CapSpace, to learn more about that. Follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA. Danny is Danny LaRue. Thanks again to everyone who gives us reviews on iTunes. Hopefully we didn't piss you off too much by not recording for a week, but we needed a little bit of a break, especially for Sports Business Classroom, which I will be telling you much more about. That was really just an unbelievable experience. Danny actually helped out a little bit with it as well. Larry Kuhn, Eric Pincus. We had all sorts of NBA personnel coming in, teaching the students, and really just fantastic experience. Hoping that we'll see a bunch of Dunked On listeners actually were there. It was great to meet everyone in person. We'll be talking more about that and hopefully convince some more people to apply for next year. But for now, that'll do it. Talk to you all next time.